Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie. This is The Reason Podcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, follow us at Reason.com, and look for us on SoundCloud. Today, we are talking with Randy Barnett of Georgetown Law and the author most recently of Our Republican Constitution. Randy, thanks for talking to us.
Well, it's glad to be here. I'm just sorry you and I are not in Vegas tonight.
Yes, there would be a lot of betting and gambling and destructive yes. behavior going on, and we
right,
saw each
like
other.
Last time.
Yes. So, Randy, you, as the leading libertarian legal scholar, you were harshly critical both of the Libertarian Party during the election, but of Donald Trump, who is now our new president, and in fact. You, in a widely read USA Today piece from March of this year, you said that if Trump wins, we got to start a new party that is actually dedicated to the Constitution. What is your primary argument or what is your primary issue with Trump?
Right. Well, he doesn't appear to somebody be anybody who cares much about the Constitution, and his political platform seems to be one of economic nationalism and other policies that have nothing to do with the Constitution. And what we need is to have one of our two parties dedicated to the Constitution. But I think that the upside of the election last night is that had Hillary been elected, I think we really would face much the same problem because the Democrats themselves are not interested in constitutionally limited government. And we do have a convention of the states movement that is afoot already, which is a movement to have an Article 5 convention to propose amendments that would restore the structural constraints of our Constitution, of our Republican Constitution. Eight of the necessary 34 states have already called for such a convention. And if anything, I think last night's developments is going to give impetus to that movement. Because it might suggest that at the state level, and it's state legislatures who must call for this, that not only Republicans, but there now may be Democrats who are interested in limiting the scope of federal power and also restoring the separation of powers, which, as long as they were holding power, didn't seem to be a problem. But maybe right. they can now see the problem now that it's Donald Trump.
So this is, I mean, for you, you know, as befits a professor at many schools, including Boston University and Georgetown, you're seeing this as a teachable moment where maybe liberals or Democrats, at the very least, and they're not exactly the same thing, but that they will understand why we want a government of limited and separated powers.
Right. I told my students, we had a discussion with my students in constitutional law today about this. And I said it would be nice if it didn't matter, if every 4 years was not the most important election of our life, and it be the most important election of our life because every important issue has to be handled by the federal government.
Specifically, what do you worry about? What would Trump do? What are the types of actions that you're most worried about specifically? Because is he going to get rid of local police departments or something?
It isn't anything specifically, Nick. It was mm-hmm. mostly went to his character as somebody who didn't know anything about constitutionally limited government, didn't care anything about constitutionally limited government. Who knows what he might want to do? I mean, all we heard him talk about were libel laws mm-hmm. that he doesn't like, which he has nothing whatsoever to do, and I don't think he could do anything about him. So there you go. I'm not so worried about that. So I don't have a particular concern mm-hmm. With him, and I do think that it's going to, he's going to staff an administration with Republicans. Republicans are not going to be doing the same thing that Democrats have been doing for the last 8 years.
Talk a bit about that then. What might get better under a Trump Department of Justice or a Trump administration?
Well, I mean, for example, we've seen these Dear Colleague letters that go out to universities that advise them that they ought to put into place procedures that essentially presume the guilt of of males who've been accused of sexual misconduct.
And these are Dear Colleague letters that are put out by the Office of Civil Rights and the Department of Education pushing to enforce Title IX provisions that provide equal
right.
opportunity at any publicly funded school.
But they're not officially enforcement letters at all. Mm-hmm. They're simply letters. That vaguely intimate a threat to funding if this advice is not mm-hmm. followed. So it doesn't have to go through the normal regulatory apparatus to issue as a rule. I think, you know, I don't see a Trump administration doing that sort of thing.
That kind of stuff is
not going to happen.
Do you see it not happening in that particular case because he's anti-political correctness and these letters, because of the ridiculous vagueness of them, they're seen as one of the main motivators of hyper politically correct kind of star chamber proceedings on campus. Is it that particular topic, or you don't think he'll do those kinds of administrative letters or dear colleague letters in general?
I just think the way the system works is Republican administrations bring in Republican political appointees who supervise the career appointees. And the question is what those people's priorities will be. And they will not have the same individual agendas that the typical Democrat appointees will have. So it really won't even come from the president. It's just going to be the way a change of administration works.
What about the question of the Republicans who were most recently in power, they seem to have very little interest in various kinds of niceties that had to do with restraining the government's ability to surveil or gather large amounts of information on people. Do you worry about that? I mean, will it go back to that sort of thing? Or is it actually that the Republican Party is more dedicated to a rule-bound, law-bound system of governance?
I wish that were the case. I don't really think that's the case. I don't think the Obama administration was particularly protective of privacy in that regard either. So I don't think that we got some great improvement over the Bush administration from the Obama administration. We did get some folks like Rand Paul in Congress and a few others that pushed back. And I think that will continue to happen. But I don't view either party as very friendly when it comes to this. And that's going to be something that I think is going to have to be the responsibility of outside groups to push for.
How do you reach out as somebody, you have a large reputation, and to many people on the kind of broadly defined left, you're anathema because you believe in economic freedom and you believe in limited government in ways that they find appalling. You have enemies on the right as well. How do you reach out to, traditional enemies to say, hey, we got a bigger problem here, and I think you should start seeing things my way?
Well, I was not in such a bad mood until you just told me I have all these enemies I didn't know about. I thought I was pretty well liked, actually.
People talk. But I mean, what is the pitch then to a kind of progressive left that, just yesterday was, banking on having a potentially unlimited ability to write dear colleague letters and to kind of start enforcing their vision of the world through all sorts of ways.
My pitch is simply, it's time to stop thinking that you guys are always going to be in power because you're not. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand. It seemed foolish to abandon the rule of law because you somehow think that you're always going to be in power and not to put yourself in the position of being under the thumb of some other guy. Mm-hmm. And Trump is almost perfect. Fortunately for the country, he's probably not the radical, crazy person that he himself makes himself out to be, because that's just the character he played during this campaign. Mm-hmm. And when he plays the character of president, it's likely to be a different character than the one of candidate.
Right.
But if he really were that scary, crazy person, that's all the better kind of guy to get the left to consider restoring the rule of law and checks and balances to protect them from people like this.
Yeah. Talk a bit about the Supreme Court. We have anywhere between zero or negative replacements to go, depending on if Trump even wants to staff up after attrition on the Supreme Court. It seems like everybody could be leaving now. What are your thoughts about the Supreme Court and Trump's appointees? And I'll point out that you showed up on Gary Johnson's list, the Libertarian Party candidate Supreme Court list. Did that make you feel good, or did that make you feel angry?
I went shopping for robes because I wanted to get one before they ran out.
Yeah, that's I think hopefully you haven't worn it outside so you can return it, right?
That's I did actually.
Yeah, save the receipt.
They had a 30-day return policy.
So what do you think this does to the future, what are the stakes at the Supreme Court, and where do you think Trump has given out at least two lists of potential of the types of justices he wants to appoint? What do you think of that? Is there any real philosophy or ideology there that's worth understanding?
This was always the strongest argument for Trump. It remains the strongest argument for Trump. I just looked at the list this morning because obviously other reporters have been in touch with me. And it's a good list. I don't know everybody on the list, but I know maybe a third to a half of the people. And of the third to the half of the people I know, I think they're good people. I think they're good. And look, the way the president, the way I was explaining to my students today, the way this works is all presidents outsource. In modern times, all presidents outsource judicial picking to the interest groups that really care about that issue. The presidents have their own policy agendas. For Trump, it's going to be trade and immigration. Mm-hmm. It's not the court. And that gets outsourced to people in the coalition that care a lot about it. And this would be people who would be loosely associated, let's say, with the Federalist Society. In the left side, it's Think Progress and Alliance for Justice and those folks, People for the American Way. They're the people that are, you know, care about this stuff on the left. That's who gets to say who, you know, propose people. And the people that have been the best thing to say about Trump, the best thing you could always say about Trump is all the people, including the two people he named during the debate, were good people. And so therefore he's listening to people who know good people. Mm-hmm. Not that he knows them. But the presidents never know them. The people he's listening to are apparently know who the good people are.
And by good people, how do you define a good person when you're talking about a potential Supreme Court justice? What are the contours of that?
Well, let me begin by saying the question mark in my mind, and this has always been the question about Trump and even the good people and what makes a good people. There's two kinds of conservative justices. There are the constitutional originalist justices, and then there are the judicial restraint, judicial conservative justices that believe in restraint. And for way too long, Republicans have been outright seeking the judicial restraint judges who will defer to Congress and defer to the president himself. And in recent years, there's been a strong movement in favor of constitutional originalist justices, more in the mold of Justice Thomas, but perhaps even more so than he. And this list contains people who probably are a little both. I can't be sure, 100% sure, which they are. That's what you need confirmation hearings for, by the way. But they're promising. And I think it would be a sad situation if he appoints judicial restraint conservatives, because they're the people that gave us Obamacare, and they're the people that say the New Deal is okay, and we just have to hold the line here and there. And I think Republicans have, by and large, turned away from that. And my hope is that the people who will be vetting these nominees will also care about originalism at least as much as they care about restraint. And that would be a huge improvement to the Supreme Court over what we have today. So there is a potential, I'm not promising it to you, Nick, but there is a potential upside to what happened yesterday for the Constitution of the United States.
Do you worry at all? We've touched on it very lightly about libel laws and whatnot. Donald Trump, like Hillary Clinton, in different ways, you know, attacked the First Amendment at various points. He said, I want to open up the libel laws so I can sue the New York Times or Jeff Bezos of Amazon, who owns the Washington Post, when they print stories that I don't like about myself. At one point, he actually said in the same weekend in December that Hillary Clinton said that we've got to start taking over parts of the internet to rid it of sites or platforms that allow jihadists to kind of meet and mingle. Trump said exactly the same thing. He was and with his patented kind of lack of understanding, he talked about how he was going to get Bill Gates to somehow shut down parts of the internet.
I remember that.
Do you worry about kind of basic constitutional rights under a Trump presidency, particularly for things like free speech and free assembly and, First Amendment issues, really?
Excuse me. Of course I do. It's the reason why I wasn't supporting Trump. Mm-hmm. As I said to my students today, you know, there was an advantage being against both of these candidates, and that is that no matter who won today, there would be good news, and that is the other person lost. So I was actually much more well-suited to be in a better mood than most people around here, because I was against both of them. So you're absolutely right. There's very good reason to be concerned about him. And then the question is, what is really going to be within his wheelhouse, something that he's actually going to have an interest in, that he's not going to be tied up doing other things, and that there won't be other people around him to stop him if, in fact, he does take an interest in these things from doing that stuff. And that's going to depend on his administration as much as it is on him. And yes, we should be concerned about it, and we should be watchful.
And you're banking, you're assuming, and I think there's good reason to, that he's kind of articulated trade and immigration as the things that he is most preoccupied with, which, of course, particularly with immigration. What are the constitutional challenges to his promises to, and they've changed over time, but to round up, 11 or 12 million people plus maybe another 4 million kids who are U.S. citizens and say they have to go?
Look, I think that at the end of the day, he has intimated so many different times that he is prepared to negotiate and bargain and reach a deal, and he's actually favored partial amnesty at times in the past, including very recently. I think the people who are counting on him to be the immigration hardliner that they would like to imagine him to be are going to be disappointed, just because I don't think Donald Trump cares that much about any particular issue in his heart. He's a New York liberal Democrat who managed to win the Republican Party as a presidential nomination as a reality TV star. And so he ran on that issue. I believe that's an issue he will be tougher on immigration than Hillary would have been, for sure. But I think it's going to be a negotiated effort to enforce existing immigration laws, which is not as radical as it sounds to enforce existing immigration laws. I think you might have a much bigger concern, actually, on the trade area, because that's where I'm not a real expert on trade, Nick, so you might want to interview someone else about this. But from what I understand, the president has been given by Congress a tremendous amount of authority in the course of enforcing and negotiating trade agreements. And to the extent the president has discretion, this president will exercise it. And this is something he really does seem to care about. And his trade policy could end up being disastrous.
Yeah. And of course, that brings it back to the starting point of what is the relationship between the president and Congress. And obviously, Hillary Clinton was also talking an anti-trade line, pulling it off of Bernie Sanders and whatnot. And maybe this is the moment where the spine of Congress will be stiffened to demand that they have more say in trade policy and that it moves in a more libertarian direction.
Maybe. I'm not optimistic about this at all. I mean, we'll have to see. I mean, you're the optimist.
I am the optimist.
always accuse me of being an optimist, too. So we both are optimists. But on this particular issue, I'm not sure I see an optimistic scenario here, other than the fact that the consequences of what he says he wants to do are so predictably onerous that they're not likely to happen. But who the heck knows? We've had Smoot-Hawley in the past. We could have Smoot-Hawley again.
Well, we will leave it there. Thank you so much, Randy Barnett of Georgetown Law and the author most recently of Our Republican Constitution.
Thanks, Nick.
For Reason, this is the Reason Podcast, and I'm Nick Gillespie. Please subscribe, rate, and review us at iTunes, and check us out at Reason.com.